Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. It is time for a classic episode of Tech Stuff. This episode originally published April 23rd, 2014. It is titled, How Hydrogen Fuel Works, Part 1. Yep, this was back when we would say part one or part two in our episodes, and I don't really do that anymore. Now I give each episode a different title, but yes, as the title reveals, this is the first half of a two-parter about hydrogen fuel. Fascinating stuff, and you know, there were a lot of people who were predicting a hydrogen fuel-based economy probably about two decades ago, and we're still not there yet. So we're going to learn more about this fuel source and what it is and how it works and why we don't actually have hydrogen fueling everything these days. So let's take a listen.
We're going to describe everything about hydrogen and how it's being used in multiple ways.
Yeah, because hydrogen is a really simple element with a huge amount of potential.
Simplest element in the universe.
One proton, one electron.
That is it. Get yourself a proton, get yourself an electron, let them make friends. You got hydrogen. So it's also the most abundant element in the universe. It's everywhere. This is the stuff that the sun fuses into helium at a temperature of millions of degrees.
Bum, bum.
Yeah, we had to put that in there.
So it's technically fueling, well, everything, I suppose, once you've got it working in the sun.
Yeah, pretty much everything on Earth, life as we know it, exists because of hydrogen being built into helium in the sun. There are some exceptions, like you could look at some extremophiles in Earth where they're living off chemicals that are being produced by gases and things being released in deep undersea fissures. But most of life, the vast majority of it, depends at least in some part on light.
Yes. And hydrogen, although we have only known about its existence as an element for a relatively short period of time, has been kind of theorized about.
Yeah,
for a good minute.
There have been people who have worked with what they called, like, they had various words for it, inflammable air being a popular one, because they realized, hey, there's this stuff that when you do things to other things happens. And then if you put a fire near it, it blows up.
Right. Inflammable meaning flammable, meaning inflammable.
Yes, exactly.
Able to be set fire to.
Right. And in this case, it's not just that it burns, it's explosive.
Yes.
So the word hydrogen is actually a combination of two words from Greek, hydro and genus, which together mean water forming. And once you know about hydrogen and you know what water is, it's H2O, it makes perfect sense. You got to have hydrogen or you don't have water. Of course, if you don't have oxygen, you still don't have water. And while this hydrogen stuff is everywhere, I mean, it's the most abundant element in the universe, it isn't often found on its lonesome.
That's because it makes friends really easily.
Yeah, it's kind of like the opposite of me. It actually gets real buddy-buddy really fast, and the buddies like it. See, I got half that equation. But anyway, hydrogen forms compounds readily, right? You get compounds in all sorts of stuff. You get water being a big example, that hydrogen bonds with oxygen, you have water. You have lots of hydrocarbons. You've got, you even have occlusion, which is molecular condensation inside igneous rocks. The point is that it's bound up with other stuff. It's not just out there on its own. So if we want to harvest hydrogen to use as fuel, you gotta think a little outside the box. You can't just go to the hydrogen store and buy it.
Yeah, it doesn't grow on any hydrogen trees. No, you have to do something to something else generally in order to get some of it.
Exactly, which means you gotta expend energy in order to get this fuel. And that's one of the things that's really important about any sort of fuel. It's not just hydrogen. We're talking about any kind of fuel where you're planning on getting energy out. If it requires you to put more energy into it to get the fuel than you're getting as a benefit of the fuel, it's a losing proposition.
Right. Although there are lots of different ways to produce hydrogen. You can use light to split water molecules. You can gasify biomass waste. You can even just kind of let a bunch of microbes do the work for you as part of their normal metabolism.
Yeah.
But one of the most popular ones right now anyway, what accounts for about 95% of the hydrogen in the United States is something called reforming, in which carbon-based fuels like natural gas, typically methane, are reacted with steam at high pressures and temperatures. That produces hydrogen, a little bit of carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, that last of which is then reacted to produce more hydrogen and carbon dioxide. You will note that both of these do produce greenhouse gases, so it's a little bit less friendly than something like electrolysis.
Yeah.
Although you have to pump a whole lot of energy into electrolysis. We'll talk a little bit more about that later.
Yeah.
Overall, reforming does have the potential to overall reduce our carbon footprint if it could provide the hydrogen for like a whole fleet of fuel cell vehicles.
Right. That's one of the big things about hydrogen. We'll talk about that in just a second, about how it does not give off greenhouse gases in ideal cases. Keep in mind, we're talking ideal cases.
Yes.
Because it all depends on how you're using the hydrogen. So, I also read that there have been some studies of algae that give off hydrogen,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, if we were ever able to make an algae farm that was efficient enough, that would be a great way. But there are a lot of people who question whether that's practical. It may not ever be something that generates enough hydrogen for it to be worth the amount of effort it would take. Again, that sort of energy losing proposition idea.
Sure.
So some other things about hydrogen. It has a low ignition energy. That means you don't have to apply a lot of energy to it to get it to ignite. That makes sense. You know, it doesn't take much to set it on fire, essentially, is what we're talking about here. It actually requires an order of magnitude less energy to ignite hydrogen than it does to ignite gasoline.
Wow.
Yeah. So that means
because gasoline is pretty flammable.
Pretty darn flammable. Yeah. Kids, let's not play with the stuff at home, shall we? Or anywhere else for that matter. Let's treat it like serious business. But it's both a good and bad thing, right? Because hydrogen, since it's easy to ignite, means that you can easily implement that in an engine. It does it very efficiently. You don't have to spend a lot of energy to make it do what you want it to do. On the other hand, because it has such a low ignition point, it's also a challenge engineering-wise, because if your engine gets hot enough, the engine itself could cause the hydrogen to ignite prematurely.
And before it gets into the operative bits. Yeah.
Right, and then it could make everything inoperative. You would get inoperative right quick. So that's, you know, that there's a good and bad side to this. If you can engineer your way around it, it can eventually be a benefit.
Oh, sure. It technically has the highest energy output by weight of any fuel, though it is the lightest element, so that's kind of
Yeah, you kind of have
obvious.
To get a lot of it together, too. So it's because it's not dense, you know, which is something else we'll chat about. So one of the reasons why we're even talking about hydrogen, one of the big ones, it's what we alluded to earlier, is the fact that the combustion is really clean, particularly if you're using hydrogen and pure oxygen as the mixture that goes into your engine.
Right, because then your output is going to be just energy and water.
Yep. You get energy in the form of the power that you generate and some heat, because, of course, we don't have any perfect systems where we don't lose some energy in the form of heat.
Sure.
But, yeah, the only other thing you get is water. You don't get anything else. And this is when I talk about mixtures, we'll talk about combustion engines a little later, too. This is a typical thing where you mix together some fuel and some air to go into a combustion engine. Same sort of thing with hydrogen. You're not putting just pure hydrogen in. You're mixing it with some form of air, in this case, oxygen. However, that being said, most hydrogen combustion engines are not using pure oxygen to mix together to make the combustible mixture.
Mm-hmm.
They're using air. So air has stuff in it besides oxygen. In fact, the primary component of our atmosphere is not oxygen, it's nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the byproducts you get with using a hydrogen combustion engine that uses air is that you get some nitrous oxides, which would be hilarious until you suffocated, but nitrogen oxides. That's a pollutant. You don't want that. And you can also get carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide if you get some oil seeping into the combustion chambers, because our atmosphere doesn't have like tons of carbon in it, but oil does.
Right.
So there are chances of having in a hydrogen combustion engine this kind of pollutants. You could get around that if you wanted to go with fuel cells, and we'll talk about those too.
We'll be back with more discussion about hydrogen fuel in just a second, but first let's take a quick break.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It is a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
So the amount of power that a hydrogen engine can generate is dependent upon a few different things. It depends upon the mix of air and fuel and how that fuel is injected into those combustion chambers in your engine. So theoretically, the maximum output of a hydrogen-based combustion engine using a premix method, this is where you have like a carburetor type situation that is mixing air and fuel together, mm-hmm. and then it goes into the combustion chamber. If you're using that method, theoretically, your maximum output is about 85% of the power generated in a comparable gasoline engine. So not as powerful, right? Mm-hmm. But if you were to take a direct injection approach, which mixes the fuel and air after the intake valve in the combustion chamber closes, then the hydrogen-based engine can theoretically produce 15% more power than a gasoline engine. So you kind of have a 15% less in one way or 15% more the other way. However, this is all based upon the idea that you're using exactly the amount of air you need to complete combustion. So you're using just the right mixture of air and just the right mixture of hydrogen. But the downside of that is that you also produce more pollutants that way.
Right. So this is a complicated issue and the numbers on it are always going to be rough. But when you're talking about fuel efficiency, you need to use more gasoline in order to make an engine do the same amount of work than you would hydrogen.
Yeah, exactly. Like you have this note about gasoline vehicles operating at around 20% efficiency. What that means is that 20% of all the energy that's being generated is actually going to doing the thing you need it to do. The other 80% is being lost in some way or another.
Sure, usually due to heat loss.
That's the big one, especially with engines. I mean, engines generate lots and lots of heat.
Mm-hmm. The ideal of a fuel cell vehicle using hydrogen is closer to 60% efficiency.
Right.
For the record, electric cars may manage somewhere between 25 and 65% fuel efficiency, depending on where you get the electricity to recharge that battery.
Right. And if you want to be really technical, a fuel cell vehicle is kind of a subset of electric vehicles.
Sure.
It's just that it's an electric vehicle that you are refueling with hydrogen.
Rather than a closed battery system.
Exactly. So, it's a great point. And that's another thing that we have to take into consideration. Now, typically, if we're talking about, you know, I just mentioned about having just enough air and fuel to complete combustion and you get that crazy 115% of a gasoline power engine, mm-hmm. But you produce more pollutants as well. Usually we're not using exactly the amount of air because we want to cut back on those pollutants. One of the big reasons we want to use hydrogen is to
cut back on pollutants.
So if we're producing more pollutants by making it really efficient, then we're like, well, we just kind of trade it off.
That was a lot of money to not do any better.
Exactly. So what we tend to see are engines that use about twice as much air as is actually required to complete combustion. Now, this reduces pollution, but
it also reduces the output of the engine.
Yeah. Sad trombone. Okay. So these are just trade-offs. This is the way the real world works. We have to sit there and say, okay, there's not a magic solution that is going to solve all the problems equally. We have to start making trade-offs.
This is a pretty good one because you can enlarge the engine size.
Yeah.
and make up for a lot of it.
Right. So if you make the hydrogen-based engine larger than a gasoline-based engine, you can kind of make up this loss. Now, that does, of course, mean you have to redesign vehicles around a larger engine. So, I mean, it's those domino effects, right? You could also include what's called a turbocharger or supercharger. And you might wonder, hey, how do those work? We'll do another episode because it's already going to be a long one for this one. So we can't sit there and jump into that and hope to make it out alive because Noel will kill us. The protective barrier is only so strong. Okay, so like we said, hydrogen, not very dense. When you've got one proton and one electron, you don't expect it to be.
Nope.
So it's at room temperature, it is a gas. Getting enough hydrogen together in one place to be useful as a fuel takes a lot of work.
And some of the easiest ways of storing it, like in extremely cold liquid form, aren't really practical for toting around in a consumer motor vehicle that might not want to incorporate a complex cooling system due to, you know, cost and weight and space issues.
So usually we end up having to figure out a way of pressurizing it under intense amounts of pressure. Now that, of course, creates another safety issue. Anytime you have a compressed gas, it's under a lot of pressure. If you rupture that containment unit in some way,
it goes kablooey.
Yeah, and then add on top of that, that the gas itself is inflammable and you've got the potential for really, really a bad day. Which is why a lot of companies that have looked into using hydrogen as a fuel in one way or another, whether as a combustion engine fuel or whether as a fuel cell fuel, have put in a lot of research and development in safety for these hydrogen canisters, or, you know, else they'll never be able to market it because it would just be too dangerous.
Sure. So, although some people argue that, I mean, gasoline tanks being driven around are also.
It's a good point. It's a fair point. I mean, we've been relying on a technology that has an inflammable fuel for more than a century.
And, you know, although it's not quite as dangerous as movies make it out to be. I mean, it's not
your car sways a bit and then explodes.
Yes.
Yeah. So if Michael Bay made cars, no one would ever get in them. But fortunately, as far as I know, he has not made one. We've been making use of this hydrogen for a long time. And in fact, like Lauren said, we were kind of playing with this stuff before we even had any idea of what it was. We didn't really know about elements or even gases. So we're going to take you on a historical journey. And along this journey, we'll be explaining how some of this stuff works, because we figured we'd kind of incorporate both the history and the technical stuff altogether. It's an experiment. Now, before we jump into the Wayback Machine, because I know all you guys have been missing it, Lauren's looking at me terrified. Yeah, Lauren, that's what that big thing is in the corner that we haven't been using. It's all dusty and stuff. Turns out it wasn't in Mongolia. It was just in a supply closet.
All right. Well, our fuel gauge is not on empty yet. We still got a bit more to go. But first, let's take another quick break.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices. And that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and last star on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano! Huh? Oh!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters. The theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Okay, so we're back and we're ready to get into the Wayback Machine, which I know is going to sound absolutely amazing. I can't believe all the bells and whistles that indicate to you that we've actually traveled back in time, because in truth, it's silent, but we have to give you some, you know, way of knowing that that's what's happened.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, it's not fun radio drama.
Exactly. So let's just go ahead and get in. Now, over here, we've got the dial, which I'm going to set back to early 17th century. You know, I don't know how it knows where I want it to go. It just does. But when is really tricky. All right. Let's just hit the button here. Here we are, 1625. It's glorious and smelly. So I want to introduce you to Johann Baptista van Helmont, who is the first person to describe hydrogen as a gas. Not only that, he's the first person to come up with the word gas to describe substances that have the qualities of a gas. He was thinking of stuff that is heavier than air or misty, or he was just trying to come up with like a collective noun to call this stuff. He proposed gas and it stuck. So he goes on to make some more observations, which in a few decades get picked up by another person, a philosopher, a natural philosopher, and we'll chat about him. His name is Robert Boyle. So between Robert Boyle and Johann, we have in 1650, Sir Theodore Turquet de Mayern, which I know I've absolutely butchered, but he's Swiss. So
I'm sure he's fine with it.
Yeah, the Swiss have a beautiful way with words that escapes the physical contortions my mouth can go through. So, but he produced hydrogen and he called it inflammable air by combining iron with sulfuric acid. Now, hydrogen is found in a lot of different compounds, including all the acids.
Right.
So if you are able to combine it with other stuff, usually that reaction you get by introducing an element into the acid
will release the hydrogen.
Exactly. Now, 1671, we get to that Irish philosopher I had mentioned, Robert Boyle. Now, he experimented with producing hydrogen as well, and he was of the New Philosophy movement. Now, this was a really interesting movement. It combined observations and experimentation with logical thinking to understand the world around him. So this is sort of a proto-scientist movement. It's before we really had the formal sciences. This is when alchemy was starting to transform into chemistry, right? We had people who had made observations and calculations on things like physics, but it's now starting to actually take form into the sciences as we know them today. So he produced hydrogen by combining iron and various acids, And that's how he started to take a look at this hydrogen gas. And he was pretty intelligent. He noticed that a gas's volume varies inversely with pressure.
Hence Boyle's Law.
Yeah, we named it after him. He also believed in alchemy and transmutation, so he didn't get everything right.
Oh, you know.
Yeah.
Lots of people today still believe in alchemy and transmutation, so.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave that for now. But yes, Boyle, he did a lot of work, and a lot of his work inspired other people. So over the next several decades, lots of different philosophers and then later chemists and scientists began to experiment with hydrogen gas. They didn't really give it a name yet, but they knew that this stuff would blow up if you exposed it to flame. So they began to really study it further until we get to 1766. And now we get to go to England, because that's where Henry Cavendish was. And he was the first to recognize hydrogen as a distinct substance. And he was also the first to describe the composition of water. You know, before that, everyone just said, it's wet. And if it gets cold, it gets hard. That was pretty much it. If it gets really hot, it gets cloudy. That's where we were with science until Cavendish came along. Okay, I might be exaggerating a little, but he absolutely loved learning for learning's sake.
He wasn't actually a scientist per se, though, was he?
No, not really. I mean, he was more like just obsessed. He was one of the wealthiest men in all of Europe. He had inherited a crazy sum of money, and he chose to live very frugally in London. He wasn't interested in the trappings of wealth. He wasn't interested in ostentation. He was actually, according to one thing I read, the only reason we even have a sketch of him is because an artist surreptitiously drew one while at a gathering, a small private gathering at his house, because he didn't
sit for a portrait.
He
wasn't
super introvert. And he didn't really publish most of his work. He published some of it, but not all of it. So,
because he wasn't really interested in that.
He just wanted to know how the world works. He was just fascinated with learning. He wasn't not necessarily as fascinated with teaching, but he was definitely fascinated with learning.
I want someone to make a awkward action hero movie about this guy.
Yeah, I have a feeling that we'd have to invent a lot of facts about his life, which makes it even better.
Yeah, that's what movies generally do anyway. I'd be less offended if I knew less about the history of the actual guy. So
yeah, I think Henry Cavendish, supervillain, would be an awesome movie. So I'll get to work on that.
Yes.
All right. Then we move to 1783 when Jacques Charles makes his first flight in his balloon La Charlière, which used hydrogen as its lifting agent, because hydrogen's lighter than atmosphere. So if you get enough of it together, the buoyancy will counteract gravity, and then you'll float right off the ground.
Go up, yeah. Meanwhile, in 1800, William Nicholson and Anthony Carlyle described the process of electrolysis, in which electricity is applied to water to break its molecules down into their constituents, being oxygen and hydrogen. This will become important later.
Yeah, but just understanding that, hey, this process where hydrogen and oxygen gets together to make water is reversible if you just pour energy into it, that's pretty cool. 1806, we have François-Isaac de Rivaz, a Swiss inventor. He built the de Rivaz engine. And again, I apologize if I'm absolutely butchering that. But this was the first internal combustion engine to use hydrogen and oxygen as a fuel. It would be nearly 65 years before you'd get the first gasoline-powered internal combustion engine. So actually, hydrogen combustible engines predate gas.
By
quite a bit. So, we've talked a lot about how electric cars are older than you think. So are hydrogen combustion engine cars. So that's kind of cool. Then in 1820, we have the Reverend W. Cecil, who writes a paper, and I love this title. Here we go. On the application of hydrogen gas to produce a moving power in machinery, with a description of an engine which is moved by pressure of the atmosphere upon a vacuum caused by explosions of hydrogen gas and atmospheric air. I think it's succinct. Pretty much you've read the whole article. Just by the title. But yeah, he proposed an engine using hydrogen as the combustible material, but it's a different style of combustion engine than what we see today. So his design involved having a chamber that you would fill with hydrogen plus regular old air, and it would be connected to a valve so that you could insert this stuff, but it wouldn't escape back out.
Okay.
Put a flame in there, and then you'd have the valve switched so it would allow it to escape again, right? You put the flame in. This causes the gas to expand rapidly. And normally in our combustion engines, we use that as a pushing force. But at this case, the piston in this chamber is all the way out already, so it can't be pushed further out. So he's not using it as a pushing force. Instead, once that gas starts to cool and is released, it starts to shrink down. It's not, and he's not letting more air in there to replace it.
And the valve is closed, so it's pulling the piston back in that vacuum that's created in the chamber.
Exactly. It's a partial vacuum, an imperfect vacuum, and that creates an area of low pressure. That low pressure pulls on the piston, which then moves to the other end of the combustion chamber. So you're using this vacuum engine. Now, it worked, but it's not really practical. So this particular design wasn't widely implemented. But it does, in fact, work. The principles are all sound. So then you had a lot more experimentation following with hydrogen, which included everything from inventors to chemists to physicists and regular old crazy people. And all of this is leading up to some pretty cool stuff, including the first fuel cell.
And that wraps up part one of how hydrogen fuel works. Next week, we will have, let me check my notes. Oh, part two. Hey, well, how about that? So if you have any suggestions for topics I should cover on future episodes of Tech Stuff, or maybe there's a topic that we have covered that is in sore need of an update, let me know. Best way to do that is to pop on over to Twitter. Our handle is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon.
Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.